Teresa Meyer.
Jessica Barstow.
Brandon Erickson.
Don Nicks.
John Rocknelli's present.
Good job.
Good job. Okay, good.
Danielle Cowley.
David Stipe.
Ross Hooper.
Cool. You have a quorum.
And did we get the? Participants, Don?
Yeah, we got Don.
Oh, we did?
Yep.
Yes. Harrison?
Oh, I guess not. Harrison?
Hi, everyone. Harrison Houston, Transportation Planner from Community Planning.
Hi.
And is there anybody else?
Good. Don's here. We got a full quorum, full house of board members for the first time in quite some time, which is wonderful. Next order of business being the minutes. I request somebody move to approve them.
Move to approve the meeting minutes as.
West means.
I second.
Cool. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right. Approved, the minutes are approved. Public comment.
I have not received any.
You have not received any? Okay. Thank Russ.
Thank you. Manager's report. Well, thank you, everybody. This is a special meeting today for me because we have many new members here online and in person. So wanted to just thank you, one, for your patience through the process, the lengthy process. And thank you for your interest. I think the work that we are doing currently and the work ahead for this committee and this board are really important, really, really vital to the future of the county and the nature of the county as it continues to grow. And so your ideas, your thoughts, your input, and your involvement, engagement in this committee is really important. So I wanted to again, just thank you and welcome you to this group. And then I wanted to turn it over to Dave tonight for an item and Danielle for an item.
Yeah, just real quickly. One of the things that we do is we talk a lot about the capital plan. It seems like we come here at least twice. And so we'll be coming next month. Just wanted to give you a heads up to talk about the draft capital plan. We'll be sending out a notice to the public for public comment in a couple of weeks. And publishing our draft 26 to 31 capital plan. And then we'll be coming to you next month with the first draft of the capital plan. Jenny will be seeing it probably next week with Ross. And then we'll have a 30-day comment period. You'll have a chance to look at it. The comment period will close. We'll make any changes that are actionable from our public comment, bring it back to you before we take it to Planning Commission. And then on to council. So it's a long process. It's gotten particularly complicated over the last several years. And we share a number of funds with our other division partners in public. And so it's fun, complicated, and we'll do our best to explain the process, especially to the new members. So we'll dominate a fair portion of the next meeting. So
in the capital plan for new members is really we have two separate budgets. One is our operating and maintenance budget, our regular operating budget. The second is our capital budget. And that budget is outlined within the capital plan. Basically what that means, the spending in the capital plan are the one-time costs, the new parks, the replacement of elements within our existing parks, the improvement to existing parks, the acquisitions of new park land. That's all captured in the capital plan. And it's updated on an annual basis, as David said, but really important because it guides the work for the future of our system.
Yeah. And we'll get into the different categories when we talk about it at length. There is one component of the capital plan, major maintenance, that can be confusing because it it's a maintenance category, but any maintenance that increases the useful life of an existing asset can be capitalized. And so we do have like re-roofing things. Like this year, we're going to re-roof all the shelters at Louisville Regional Park, and that's considered a capital project. So we'll discuss that and how we prioritize those projects, because we have a very significant deferred maintenance list. And so we'll talk about that at length at the next meeting. Daniel?
I have one question, if that's okay.
Yeah, sure.
So is the parks budget, whether it be the operation, maintenance, or capital plan that goes into the county's annual budget, is it communicated back to Kathleen through the parks or through the public works? Do you communicate your proposed budget to public works, and then all the contributions that go into public works are then directly communicated to Kathleen, or are you communicating with her directly?
So there's a process by which we submit our budget on an annual basis, and any change to the base budget is an additional request or ask. And so from the operating side, yes, that all goes through our public works leadership and then up to Kathleen.
And we do a similar process with the capital plan, but it's different than the operations and maintenance plan. If we want to change the O&M budget, we have a change request process. With the operations and maintenance plan, we have the park improvement fees that we collect from the development community, and we have real estate, our portion of the real estate excise tax that we use for major maintenance. And so that's sort of an internal conversation. We have that conversation, and then that conversation moves on to Ross and Jenny have that conversation, and then Ross and Jenny and the public works director have that conversation, and then it goes to Kathleen. Then we have a hearing with the council after we go to the planning commission, and the planning commission is more of sort of an information session. They very rarely would be involved. And in fact, for the last 3 years, we've not gone to planning commission because they've just deferred it straight to council. Yeah. So,
okay. Thank you. Any other questions? Okay. Danielle?
Yeah. So let me see if I can share my screen.
So Danielle is with Legacy Lands, the Legacy Lands Group. And the Legacy Lands Group is a really key part of the makeup of all public lands within the county. In Legacy Lands, they're dedicated to acquiring lands and setting those lands aside for acquisition conservation purposes. And so if you look at an inventory map of Legacy Lands, a lot of the lands are on waterways, sensitive areas, wetlands. And so there's a separate fund that funds the Legacy Lands work, closely connected to Parks and Nature and the work at Parks and Nature, really, really after the same goals.
So the business in front of all of you today is we need to establish a subcommittee. So with the tax levy, cities, nonprofits that qualify are allowed to apply for grant round for funding of properties. We had a call for projects. Our call for projects closed after April 1st. We do have an application we need to review as a subcommittee to decide if it's vetable for funding. And so the business is we need to establish a subcommittee so that the whole group doesn't have to participate on the site walk, the interview, that kind of thing. At that point, that subcommittee will come back to the PAB in general. And this is the typical schedule. Nothing's changed. And then we will present, the subcommittee will present, and we'll present what we've discussed, what we've identified as moving forward with. And then PAB would be the governing body to then recommend those property acquisitions for funding to county council. County council will then take that action if they so choose, and then we would proceed with a interlocal agreement or a nonprofit relationship agreement. So that's what we're here for today, is to seek, I guess.
Guinea pigs.
Yes. People who want to hang out with me.
Yes.
Who's the applicant?
City of Vancouver.
Yes. How many people do you need in the subcommittee?
There, so we can't have more than three, because we can't have over a quorum. So it has to be three or under, technically.
And how often do you think you'll need the subcommittee?
So the subcommittee, we would be doing a site walk, the site tour. In June, the sponsor will come to us and do a presentation to the subcommittee. The subcommittee would evaluate that, so I'd expect an hour of your time or less. We would evaluate that after the subcommittee, or after the sponsor pitches their project. And then at that point, then we would come back to PAP. So really, it's probably two meetings, and it's pretty small this round.
And you think the site
one will be one applicant?
One applicant.
One applicant. The other ones fell through. We had other cities that were interested in another nonprofit, but they couldn't make it work in time.
And the site walk will probably be in May, you think, or?
Yes. So the site walk can be, exactly, it can actually be right now, April to May to June. So it's April, May, June timeframe.
Are there fixed times for this already, or is it?
Okay. It's based on who can attend, and we kind of just have to doodle poll it and figure it out how we best can coordinate that. And then also access to the property, since that is an acquisition property, right? So we need to get, the sponsor has to coordinate that with the seller.
Well, I'd be interested. I'm just really busy in April, so I don't know if I'm going to be able to do this. June is open. So.
Okay.
Okay. One comment or question. Since it looks like we're also looking for people to participate in the Bicycle and Pedestrian Advisory Committee, and we're soliciting reps from this group to interact with them.
Yes.
Would it be fair to present both needs so that we make informed decisions about which of the two we might be able to commit to before committing to one before hearing the other?
After yours. Yeah.
Does that make sense?
And, yeah.
Put Harrison on the spot.
Yep, we're on the spot.
Well, then we're making an informed decision. Actually, the way that I like one better.
Good suggestion. Yes. Harrison? Do you swear?
Might not have heard.
Okay. Would you like to make your pitch on bicycle transportation? Or pedestrian devices? Yes.
Sorry, can you repeat? What's the ask for me?
The ask for you is to explain what you're asking for from us.
Yes. Just a quick introduction again. Hello, my name is Harrison Husting. I'm a transportation planner with our community planning department at the county. In my role, I am the staff coordinator for the Bicycle Pedestrian Advisory Committee. And I reached out late last year to some of the parks staff to kind of inquire about ways that maybe we can build in some collaboration between BPAC and the Parks Advisory Board. Specifically in BPAC's bylaws, the Parks Advisory Board is called out as a partner that the group needs to kind of collaborate with. And I know looking through kind of the county's PROS plan and the bicycle and pedestrian master plan, there's a lot of crossover between trails. I just kind of wanted to inquire if there was interest of kind of that cross-pollination, and it kind of unsure what that would look like. We do have one member from our group has kind of volunteered to maybe act as a liaison on behalf of our group. If you want to do the same, I think that would be welcome. Maybe it could look like something like doing joint meetings sometimes to talk about trails. I think there's, we can kind of shape it however we want. And I think there's no like firm commitment that you would have to come to every one of our meetings, but we meet the fourth Tuesday of every month. And so it could be like a quarterly thing. Yeah, I think there's probably a lot that we could still kind of flesh out to kind of figure out what that would look like. But yeah.
So Harrison and I had a conversation about being more connected. And unlike our ex officio members that represent the school board that aren't here, we had talked about having a bicycle pedestrian advisory committee member who is sort of an at-large or ex officio member of this committee, and likewise a Parks Advisory Board person that attends their meeting and an alternate. And then how often would that person meet? And so Harrison was saying either is it monthly or is it quarterly? And it seems like a quarterly commitment would not be too much, and perhaps frequent enough, and it might be a good starting point. So if there's interest at that level of commitment, you know, at this point, and there's somebody who's interested in making that commitment, and then an alternate, that would be what I would suggest. And I don't know, Harrison, is there somebody on the pack who's interested sort of at that sort of quarterly level? Once every 3 months, they attend a PAB meeting and you would have an alternate perhaps?
Yeah, I think we do have one designated person who would be interested in coming. And then what I can do is I can follow up with the group to maybe get an alternate in case they're not able to make it kind of during that time. And then that way I can also include maybe that person on who would like to join our group just on the monthly distribution of meeting materials in case maybe you see something that might be interesting that you might want to, in case maybe that we talk about a topic that's maybe not, doesn't follow that quarterly schedule, they might be interested in, that way you could hop on or so forth. So it's kind of a, yeah, I guess a loose
and commitment. If we stagger those quarterly attendances, then we get, you know, a really good overlap. So and then one other thing that I'd like to remind everybody of, we're going to be starting an update of our Parks, Recreation, and Open Space plan. And one of the things that we removed from the current adopted plan is the trails chapter. We're going to be adding that back in. I'm not quite sure why it was removed in the last plan, but I will be I'll be working pretty closely with the Bicycle Pedestrian Advisory Council and be attending, you know, a lot more of their meetings and collaborating with Harrison while we're doing that. So this will be an important connection, and especially next year, we're starting that post plan. So we're going to be adding the tea back in. So
I have a question. What time of day on the fourth Tuesday does that committee work meet?
The time on the fourth. So we meet from 6 o'clock to 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. And it's at the Public Service Center downtown. 1300 Franklin Street.
And they meet on the sixth floor in the training room.
And it is also a hybrid meeting too. So you could also join online as well.
Harrison, just a quick question. Janie Haygood was here a few months ago, who's the chair of the City Parks Advisory Board, or Council, whatever they call them. Also interested in talking about trails. And I don't know if you've talked to her at all, but just throw that out.
Yeah, I have not talked to them yet. I think this would be a good starting point for us. Oh, and then we could kind of go from there to kind of see who else we could collaborate with. But yeah, thank you for that.
You got somebody competing with you for.
Mine's only two commitments. I just want to make sure, and I need to see a cool piece of property. You can hang out with him all you want, but I think mine's pretty cool.
Well, that's actually a really good point. You can dip your toe into the subcommittee waters over here.
Yeah, you can touch the waters.
Or you can jump into the deep end of the pool.
The trails.
Yeah, with BPAC. So
we can make interest, but yeah.
Yeah. That's a good point.
So with this latter discussion, am I understanding correctly that we'd have someone who represent us, but there's an alternate, and that those two people could decide to go back and forth. And if there's a quarterly commitment, then between those two, you might go once every 6 months. Is that what I mean? Is that?
We can do that.
Okay.
Every quarter, if you want.
Or you both can go. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I mean, you wouldn't both be precluded from going. I mean, four people couldn't go because then you would be in violation of public meeting laws because you'd have more.
So the person and their alternate could choose to go jointly.
Yeah, they could go together. Yeah. If you're so into it. You wouldn't have to duke it out or rock, paper, scissors or anything like that. So.
And with the PROS plan coming up, I think what Harrison recommended, it kind of joint meetings between the two committees, yeah, boards, I think will be something that we will build into that, to that process.
I would love for us to have an annual joint meeting personally. I don't know why we haven't done it in the past.
So volunteers for these two bodies of work?
I'll join Danielle and her.
Toe dipper.
Does Danielle need two?
I can't do the other. I have a max of three. I want to join. Please feel free.
Teresa, Jessica, and Janice are in. Danielle.
Deal. Easy.
Okay.
And good. Then anybody for the trails?
Well, Janice can't join the.
I can't do the other one. I've got a conflict.
Okay.
And, you know, God forbid, I should really try to jerk that board around just to have something fun.
Anyone for the trails committee?
Well, you know, I mentioned, I think this came up last month, and I mentioned that I'm active in the Philida Community Neighborhood Association, and we just did a pretty holistic survey of the residents in the Philida area to get their feedback on pedestrian and bicycle safety concerns. And so we have a meeting coming up to like digest that information and decide how to make use of it. So it feels like there might be a little bit of overlap between what I'm doing there and what this committee is about or this board's about. So provided that there's someone else who could join me and maybe share those responsibilities, I could be available to help.
Fantastic.
I haven't heard from Don or John.
I can be an alternate if nobody else wants to do it.
Let it do it.
Thanks, Chris. Okay. Two alternates? That's great.
There you go. Right.
Once every 9 months.
Yeah. Harrison, we have Brandon and two alternates for you.
Okay.
Teresa and Jim.
Great. Thank you.
I've got a few more things that I wanted to finish off with our legacy man stuff. So one, I'll show you, sorry for the trying to share again. We have a ribbon cutting happening next month, May 9th. This is the East Fork Reconnection Project. It's the $20+ million restoration along Lower Daybreak Park all the way 3 miles downstream. Everything is on the Lower Columbia Estuary Partnership's webpage. You are all cordially invited, and then I can have Amy send you an email with the correct email address for those that may not have access. Here is the RSVP link, which if you look at it, there's a lot going on. Let's see if it loads. So it's free. It's free.
It's free. May 9th.
May 9th. So it is at May 9th at 2 p.m. And there's an address there. There's going to be the representative Peter Averno that's coming from Washington, the 20th district. Sue Marshall, Councilor Chair Sue Marshall is coming. We're going to be doing a tour of the project site. After the ceremony, we're going to head to a pizza place, and they actually brewed a special beer for the ribbon or the construction project. So you can join them in the center for those things. And we would love to have you there if you're interested in seeing that. It's a pretty cool project. It is the most expensive conservation project we've ever done to date, price tag wise. So it's pretty impressive. So yeah, there's that. And then this computer system is pretty laggy, so my apologies. Let's see if this actually opens. It's not going to. I was going to show you all the legacy lands properties because that's one of the requests that Ross asked me to show you. But it's not loading here, unfortunately. If I back out, you can sort of see a lot of the green in this. Oh, wait, I got to show. Thank you, Amy. We're telling me that they have it showing. So there's a mix here, and if it, let's see.
You're saying all the green is legacy?
It's combined right now with parks. I wish I had a better mapping system for you to see. Is my other one's not opening for us? Promise, I know where I'm going.
I've got a map here.
Do you?
Yeah. I can share.
Sure.
Yeah.
All the green dots in this map right here that you can see are all legacy lands acquisitions over the years. There's a substantial amount. You can see we focused heavily on the East Fork, Lewis River, Salmon Creek Greenway Corridor, Vancouver Lake, even in Camas, we bought, you know, Camp Curry was one of them. Green Mountain was another one. Fallen Leaf Lake Park was another one. These are all Big Eddy down here on the far right side. We've helped a variety of people pick things up. And these are all individual tax lots. So every dot is an individual tax lot, which is quite a bit of land, if you consider that. Some of it was DNR transferred lands. Some of it was purchased or donated. And then what you don't see here is conservation easements. That's another thing we do, where we acquire these easements to protect the green space, but then the private property owner still retains the property, and we can benefit from the habitat perspective. So, any questions? We own over 5,500 acres that we've acquired over 5,500 acres with everybody's tax dollars. The tax dollars.
I'll say that's about a third of our land, roughly.
Say that again.
It's probably about a third.
Yeah. Okay. That's great.
And then we all pay the conservation futures tax levy, which is 6.25 cents per 1,000 assessed value. So this is your piggy bank. This is what we're buying with that piggy bank. We're buying those high conservation value lands. So thank you. That's all.
Thank you, Danielle. Yes.
Thank you for letting us kind of blow up the agenda.
Yes. Yeah, that blew the agenda to pieces.
Yeah, certainly did. I can't
believe
Jim let her do that.
Manager's report.
Yes.
Danielle has a commitment tonight.
Yes.
Later, so that's
nice. We're busy. Oh, okay. You're a train hobby.
Very well.
Yes. Okay. Back to you.
Yes. Item one, action. Item. This is the bylaws conversation. So this has been an ongoing conversation about the wording in the bylaws specific to meeting frequency and time of meeting and flexibility that we have or don't have within the bylaws. So the bylaws are attached to the agenda. Specifically, what we're looking at and discussing today is section one, meetings. So the way this reads is the regular public PAB meeting, PAB, Parks Advisory Board, is held quarterly on dates to be determined by advisory board members. Meeting dates shall be set dependent upon county staff availability, and conflicts with other county meetings should be avoided. Special meetings may be held as often as the board deems necessary. All meeting dates, agendas, and minutes will be posted on the Clark County website. So we met following our last meeting, we met with our attorney who reviewed this, and we posed the questions that were asked from our last meeting and prior meetings. And our attorney determined that the flexibility that the questions raised, flexibility is present within the current bylaws. So in essence, you can, as a board, decide when you want to meet, but must be held at least quarterly for the bylaws. And there is no other requirement beyond that. So the flexibility is there to do whatever it is this board chooses to do and meet whenever they would like to within that quarter or monthly, as we've been meeting. So that's the guidance we've received.
Okay. So are we thinking we still want to have one monthly, or we do? Okay.
Good. Well, that makes it sound like it's good as is.
It is.
If your decision is to meet on a monthly basis and then in the future potentially change the day of the meeting, you have that flexibility within the bylaws the way they're currently worded. So we don't need to change anything.
This doesn't like it.
Hey, I am not a goat.
No,
nor do I have horns. Therefore, I know when to quit butting my head against the bureaucratic wall. I make a motion, we leave it as is. Because it's legal.
Second.
I'm just worried about the spaces between the sentences. My teacher thing is poking in. Yeah.
Tedious
formatting. Yes.
I can tell. See them. The template here, right?
Worried about the rag right?
No, I am not. I like the rag right.
Okay.
Yes, I do. Okay.
You're not a full
I do not like justify.
I just want to make sure.
That doesn't bother you, actually.
The rag right? Rag right is easier to read.
We're not doing anything, so.
So.
They're still in draft form, so the action is.
What we would need to know is, are these satisfactory? Do these work for you?
Flexible.
Or would you like more specificity?
No. Okay. I wanted more specificity because the public who might want to come talk would look and say, oh, I have to wait a whole quarter for the meeting I just missed. And I recognize that that's just going to be the way it is. I prefer the monthly because it's very clear as to what we actually do and what we continue to intend to do. But whatever.
This would be good dialogue enough, but you know, who's going to go look at our bylaws to figure out what you got to go do?
Just look at the website,
right? What does it say on the website?
It says we meet monthly.
Yeah. I think that if you decided to fall back on the bylaws and you changed the website, that's what people are going to look.
Yeah, most people don't read bylaws, even to who those are on boards.
I do have a point of discussion, Jim. I am no goat either, and I'm not going to pound my head against the wall just because. I think the most important point for me was that we notify the public with enough time that they can adjust. And if we're meeting quarterly, if we want to meet quarterly, or the bylaws say we must meet quarterly, then the notice to the public should be quarterly in advance. On the website, or however we do it in the paper, we do it on the website. It's just that the public can't be expected to constantly check the website if we're moving our meeting day around. And the member of the PAB that initiated this discussion is no longer here. So it may be a moot point. But I see this happening in the future as well, is everybody has competing interests and meetings that they have to go to, and it's busy. I get that. So if that's the case and we want flexibility, let's build something in there that allows us to have that and notify the public. It doesn't matter to me when the heck we meet, whether quarterly, monthly, doesn't matter. What matters to me is, because we are public servants, is that we have a lead time for the public to be able to know so they can have the opportunity to attend our meetings. So that stands up in front of, you know, in front of the judicial if we need to.
So Don, you're okay with having the website say we tend to meet quarterly, or excuse me, monthly. You're okay with that, right?
And right. And that's fine with me. And they, okay. so that they know the day. If we change the day, there's gotta be a mechanism in place that holds us to the standard of letting you, like the day before the meeting and changing on the website, that does not pass bar to me. That's unacceptable. You know, if you're going to meet monthly, put it out a month ahead of time. If you're going to meet quarterly, put it out 90 days ahead of time. There's got to be some type of predictability and routine in our meetings so the public is aware.
Yes.
If we weren't public servants, if we were on some kind of private board, that's fine. But we're public servants, and I think we owe that to the public that we serve.
So can I suggest that if the meeting date changes, we would discuss that in advance and indicate how much notice we would want to give about that change. Otherwise, on our website, we indicate that when the meetings are on this regular timeline we're on now, it's a standing regular meeting.
Yeah.
So we would post with whatever notice you would like us to post if we change that meeting date.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Yep. Yes.
So would those discussions not happen in this meeting? So we would know, for example, if our May meeting is going to change, we would know that, theoretically would know that today.
We would discuss that in advance.
This website could be updated. Maybe it's
right. Right.
Yeah. It's good.
I mean, what happens if you close the front desk at the Public Works building unexpectedly on an afternoon? People get angry, right? They expect operating hours. They expect the PAB to have hours or meeting times. It's the same philosophy.
Yep. Absolutely.
Sounds reasonable. Okay, so Janice, you had a motion.
I did have a motion. I will second that motion.
Motion for what though?
To leave as is.
Or as is.
Yeah.
Okay. No, this is the motion.
This is the motion. Yeah, I don't think we changed it with the discussion.
Okay. No. And you said
it. Second by Teresa.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? We're done with that. Thank you.
So we have completed unfinished business 1, 2, and 3. And we're on to 4, which is the Parks and Nature Sustainable Future overview summary of the work session and next steps. So I will share the PowerPoint deck. I don't know who was not here at the last meeting, or who was, I don't recall, but I can just walk through this really quickly for everybody's update.
Did you guys have?
Correct, yes.
You did a good job on that.
Oh, thank you. So we had a conversation at work session with council, and that conversation was about the future of Parks and Nature, and specifically the financial picture and this is not showing up the way I want it to. We're gonna go with this format. So we have just a really unique park system in the county that is one that has evolved over the years and changed. It's a county park system that's made up of parks that are typical of a county system. They're large. Some parks are really large regional parks and community parks, and others are small neighborhood parks throughout our system. And we're at this really pivotal key time within the system, a system that's changed over time, and the system that has opportunity to grow with the demands of the future. And we're going to talk about those demands of the future and kind of the budget limitations and restrictions we have in front of us. So we'll go through the overview. We'll talk about our mission, current state, budget projections, and then what the potential pathways for the future look like. So our group, Parks and Nature, focuses on these key areas: acquisition of land, planning and design of that land, developing that land into a functional park, and then operating and maintaining that space, just like you see here outside the window. This is one of those sites. And then, of course, permitting and rentals. And the image on the screen is of Luke Jensen Park, and this is one of our active recreation athletic field complexes. So we permit and rent out those spaces throughout the system. So the parks, the Parks and Nature land totals 7,166 acres, and then Legacy Lands, Danielle's and Kevin's group, that's essentially, from our community's perspective, is public land and usable land, and that, but it's not considered parks. And that's about 4,300 acres total. It's 111 sites throughout the county. Our Parks and Nature group maintains the Legacy Lands acreage as well.
Okay, quickly before you move on, John has a question in the chat. Is this based on current projections, or do we have contingencies if Vancouver is expanding?
Yeah, it's part of the conversation, and we'll talk a little bit about that, John. Good question. The park types are broken up like this. So we have neighborhood parks. Those are the small parks. And to John's question, a lot of those parks are within the Vancouver urban growth boundary. So those neighborhood parks are typical of a city park system. And we have acquired those lands over many years specifically for the intent that someday that will become City of Vancouver. And those parks are acquired or part of the Vancouver park system over time. And that's typical of a county park system changing over time as the cities grow.
What's a good one? Well, actually,
what's a good active one?
Almost all of those properties were acquired when we were the Vancouver Clark Park District.
Yeah. So that's
to complicate things.
That's we don't need to get
What neighborhood do you live in?
Well, I live right by John Ball Park in Vancouver in uptown.
Okay, I don't know where that is.
And then our
City Park. Do you know where Bosco Farms Park is?
No, I do not.
Do you know where? So Hazeldale, that's a community park right over here. That's a community park. Any of our parks with a parking lot
and a bathroom.
Community park.
Okay.
Any park.
It has to have a parking lot and a bathroom.
Well, if it has a parking lot, generally that's considered a community park.
Okay.
A park with just a playground and some trails, that would be a neighborhood park. Okay,
so small parks that are
5 acres or less don't generate traffic to the park. They serve a neighborhood, half a mile walkable.
I just wanted to.
So think about the small park down the street from your house.
Yes.
That is right. So those are typical of a city system, not a county system. So we are in this place where we have the large regional parks and community parks out the window. And we also have the small parks.
Gotcha.
The next level up is a community park. So 20 to 100 acres. Regional parks are larger. So Louisville, Frenchman's Bar.
Yeah,
Vancouver, Lacamas Lake, those are regionals. Okay. And then natural areas. So these are spaces that are just hiking trails or their legacy lands. So here's an overview of who's using and how our spaces are being used. This is last year's data. So we had over 1,700 shelter rentals, 259 special event rentals. Luke Jensen had over 3,600 hours of reservations for our fields there. We sold 5,616 parking passes. So that's the annual parking pass. And then we had day of parking transactions, 139,000. We know this is a tiny fraction of the people that are actually using the park. We know this based on cell phone data. We know there were more people in the park than 139.
And you only sell parking passes at what? Four parks?
Four regional parks.
So four parks. Of the parks. So that's just a...
And we don't have full-time...
Yeah, Don, go ahead.
Hey, are you using Earth Economics with the cell phone data? Is that what you're referring to?
We did a demo with Placer AI, but a similar tool where they essentially take pings from cell phones, anonymous data, and they show how many visitors are in a place over time.
I'm very familiar with that. I caution using that data as solid evidence because, for example, I know that most of your workers, they're there, right? So you have to kind of slice them out, and the data can do that as well. Also, though, people like me, I've got four cell phones, right? I've got a work phone, I've got my personal phone, I have a watch, and my vehicle has a booster. So the towers don't distinguish very clearly that that's all the same person. It skews your data quite ridiculously. So I would agree that you're probably having more visitation than what you'd expect. But the cell phone data, there's a lot more work that needs to be done in order to make that really solid evidence. I don't know. Just some food for thought.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Don. The mission, why we exist and what we're after. So we exist per statute through the growth, the State Growth Management Act. We are required to plan for the existing residents and the incoming future residents and businesses and providing parks and natural areas and open space for your residents. And that shows up in the Washington Administrative Code and the Revised Code of Washington that you see here. And then also that's captured in those goals, and how we achieve those goals are captured in the county comprehensive plan. And then the comprehensive plan refers to the Parks and Recreation Open Space Trails Plan. So there's a lot of planning done to reach those goals. And so this is, we exist per state statute, but there's a bigger reason on the local level. Why do people actually want to come to our parks? Why do they use our parks? It's because we enrich communities by creating and stewarding parks that promote health and wellness. People are using our parks for health and wellness. We boost economic vitality in the county. If you look at how many people are coming to Clark County to participate in activities in parks, to preserve natural areas and to ensure that those parks and natural areas are accessible by all, that everyone feels welcome in our parks and that they can access our parks. And so these are the kind of rolling up those themes that you saw in our mission statement: access, sustainable stewardship, economic vitality, and health and wellness. And health and wellness is really about emotional, mental, and physical well-being of our community members. And the spaces where that happens are in our parks, natural areas. And we know this because as we did our PROS planning work, we heard from folks, and we heard 98% of the folks we surveyed think that parks and nature are important to the quality of life in Clark County. And 91% of those we surveyed visited a parks and nature park at least once a month. So we know that the community really values the fact that our parks are accessible and inviting. Let's talk about where we're at now, the current state. So here's a map, a very small image that you can't really read. The orange are the legacy lands that Danielle was talking about. The green dots are the park spaces. You can tell the difference between the types of parks we talked about. The neighborhood parks are a tiny little speck, and most of them are within that urban growth boundary just north of Vancouver. And then the large regional parks you can clearly see on the map as well, the big green areas. And so everything that's north of Vancouver, and you can't really differentiate it in this
on this.
Can I zoom in for you, Ross?
But essentially, the area north of Vancouver, a little too close. This area is the urban growth area of Vancouver. So eventually, Vancouver will grow north. And this area is also the area where we have voters approved a metropolitan park district. And that metropolitan park district is a standing levy on property taxes that funds the acquisition, development, and operations of parks, but only in that area. Okay, so there's a dedicated funding source right there. But the rest of the county has a different funding source. It's the general fund. And so we'll talk about a little bit about that. Next slide. So I talked about meeting future demand, meeting existing demand. This is from our last PROS plan, our Parks Recreation Open Space plan. And you can see we have a gap of 2,389 acres currently in our system. And that is the gap that we are trying to fill by acquiring new parkland and developing new parkland. And of that gap, we know we need to develop the bar on the right, we need to develop 551 of those acres into active recreational spaces. So these are our existing gaps the last time we completed our PROS plan. This is similar data. This is within the growth boundary area. You can see in the red, in 2020, we had a number of areas that were demonstrated gaps where we needed to build new parks, acquire new land, and develop those parks. But if you look at the projection on the right side in 2030, all of the areas are in deficit, meaning we have bigger gaps. That gap's going to grow over time. And we will not fill these gaps. And I'll talk about why in a second here.
John has a question.
Yeah, John.
Are any of these areas in the process of having master plans developed?
Yes, they are. Some of them. Talk a little bit about why not all of them. So our quick picture, the reason we're not going to fill those gaps is because our operations and maintenance dollars are in deficit. And this is a quick snapshot of the data we're going to look at in the following slides. So we have 521,000 residents in Clark County, 7,166 acres of parkland, that's not including legacy lands, 31 full-time staff maintain those lands, and we have an operating budget of $8.14 million to maintain those lands. So this is a bar chart from the National Recreation Park Association, and this data is compiled from across the country of agencies of varying size. So smallest agencies are the dark green bar, and the largest agencies are in the gray bar. So we fit within the gray bar of population over 250,000. And it shows on the vertical axis the operating expenditures per capita of those different agencies. So if you look, the median for an agency of serving 250,000 people or more, the median operating dollars per capita is $57.61 per capita. And if you compare that to where we're at $15.62 per capita in Clark County. So significantly under the national median. You can measure that in a different way. You can measure it by looking at operating expenditures per acre. And here's that comparison. 4,421 per acre is the national median, and we are at 1,136 per acre. You can also look at it to full-time staff per 10,000 residents. National median is 4.7 full-time staff per 10,000. We have 0.59 staff per 10,000.
I like these numbers, Ross.
Pardon?
I like these numbers. I'm not so crazy about the price per acre because it's all about location, location, location. But the FTE and the price per capita, I like that. Those are good numbers to highlight.
Different ways to measure it, right? And some of them capture some elements and others leave out other elements. So in all of those, in summary, our staffing level is significantly under the national average. We are not and will not meet the growth needs that I just showed you, the gaps. We will not meet those because of our operating deficiencies. Our operating expenditure is significantly under the national average, and the deferred maintenance list as a result is continuing to grow. Now let's look into the future. That's our current state. So here is GCPD, which is that Metro Park District I told you about, just north of the Vancouver, but within the urban growth boundary. This is where there's dedicated funding for parks operations. And this is a bar chart of our expenditure to revenue. Revenues in gray, expenditures in blue. So in 2025, you can see there's a gap. And that gap continues to grow all the way through 2030, which is as far as our forecast goes. So over the next 5 years, that gap will grow. And this is an area where we have dedicated funding. We have that Greater Clark Park District, that Metro Park District. Here's everything outside of that urban growth boundary of Vancouver. Similar story. We have gaps, and those gaps will continue to grow through 2030. And here is the same data in a different format. So our current deficit is projected to be $832,000 this year. And by 2030, it'll be over $2 million.
That's both district and regional park
combined, right? Combined. So there's a significant deficit in both operating budgets and worsening into the future, and the current state is not sustainable.
This can be taking into consideration the stuff that's happening right now in the general world, right?
Yes.
Where we expect fewer dollars coming to us for stuff like this, right?
These budgets do not
federal.
I mean, there's no tribute
on federal
from the state. Yet.
No.
We don't
rely on federal dollars. So now let's look into the future. So these are growth projections from the bar chart is from our last growth plan. So you can see by 2040, Clark County is projected to have over 643,000 residents. And then if you look down at the bottom, so that bar chart is from the last growth plan update. So it's not that old, a few years old, that data. But if you look down at the bottom, these are the most updated data that we have from the state. And it actually says for 2040, it says 660,653. So the growth rate has increased in Clark County. So we are anticipating more people than we did when we last updated our PROS plan. And our PROS plan is still current through 27. So it's not old data.
When did we last update our growth plan? How many years
ago? Our PROS plan was last updated in 23. I think it was, yeah.
Adopted in
22
to 27.
And it's already exceeded.
Correct.
The people coming here in numbers higher than you had predicted only 2 years ago.
Correct.
Yeah, we didn't predict summer in the PROS plan, but the growth is outstripping the prediction by the.
So here's the same data, different format. This is from the state. So there's three scenarios for our future. We're going to walk through those scenarios and what the implications are, what they mean for parks and nature in Clark County. So the decline scenario, this assumes we do nothing. We keep the gaps as they are. We would be forced to close parks. The parks that we leave open, we'll have to close amenities within those parks. The level of service will decline. Can't fully anticipate no restrooms or very few restrooms open. It would mean the end of new park acquisition, end of new park development, and we would have safety issues throughout the park system, those parks that were actually open. So that's the decline scenario if we do nothing. Here's the sustain scenario. This assumes all we do is fill the projected gaps, those forecasted gaps. We would be able to keep parks open and amenities open, not adequate to meet our growth needs, We would continue to invest in some new park acquisitions, but we wouldn't be able to do anything with those. They would just sit there. We would be able to do limited preventative maintenance. We wouldn't increase our level of service, and we wouldn't address any deferred maintenance issues throughout our system.
I have a question. Under that scenario, do you still continue to water and irrigate the grass and mow it?
Probably not.
Then I have a comment. The Gordy What's-His-Face Park will be your vision of what those parks will turn into. I don't know if you spent any time there, but it's not the pristine golf course it used to be. Sure has a lot of weeds, though.
I'll be there tomorrow morning.
Yeah.
So the last scenario is the fulfill scenario. This assumes that we find funding, we figure out how to fund our system consistent with our peer communities, with that national median level. It would allow us to keep up with a growing community and scale our preventative maintenance and operations maintenance with that growth. It would allow us to keep pace with that growth and reinvest in significant regional parks and shift, make the transition as Vancouver grows north. We would be able to shift our focus as a county park system and make the transition to a county park system instead of a county park system maintaining city scale parks. So here are the staff actions, regardless of scenario. These are the things that need to happen. Number one, we need to rebalance our portfolio. So a county, I just talked about that transition. A county system is a system made up of large regional parks and community parks, not neighborhood parks. And so making that transition happen and rebalancing now, starting that process now, is an action we need to take.
Can I ask a question, Matt?
So yeah.
There's a neighborhood park outside the city limit. What do you mean that we start that now?
So what that would look like is working with the city of Vancouver to develop a transition plan and a framework for that transition. So the handoff would not happen now, but we would understand what that handoff would look like and define the roles and responsibilities when that handoff happens.
It's an advantage to Vancouver. If as they expand, they're supposed to have parks for so many, you know, they have to plan. And we've got a park already done.
I think
it'd be an advantage for them.
It's almost as if that was the plan. And actually it is. And so this is a story of growth. This is a story of the fact that Clark County is so unique that people want to move here.
So
I experienced this when I was in King County most of my career. King County made this transition. And as the county, as the cities grew and annexed, the county transitioned their neighborhood parks to cities that were growing. And so this is a positive story. And this is how the Growth Management Act works. This is how it's supposed to work.
So when the North Bend Mall annexation occurred, that's the Costco Home Depot area. They took in a developed property and an undeveloped property, and there was an agreement. And there's in the RCW that establishes the methodology to form a metropolitan park district. There's language about annexation and how that occurs. So there's an agreement, there's an interlocal agreement between the city for that annexation and how those parks were.
So that was a one-off annexation. I think what I'm suggesting here in this staff action is that we take a holistic approach and that we develop a framework for all future annexations and transitions.
Better.
The second item is that we revitalize and reinvest in our significant regional parks, the places like where we are right now, and make these truly the types of parks, and I'll show you some examples of this in a minute. That act as regional spaces for the entire county. And operationalizing those existing assets we have this amazing farm here. What does it look like if this was welcoming and people felt like they could come here and explore this place? Creating synergistic partnerships partners and within our community and investing in those partnerships. Synchronizing with cities so our timing is understood and agreed upon. And then a focus on the future state. And this is really thinking, this is really a mindset that we can shift how we're approaching, how we're managing our parks.
I think one of the things also that kind of affects this is that the city's annexation right now is 20 years behind. So they haven't caught up with where they're supposed to be or where they had planned to be.
Yes.
So on item number one, are you suggesting that the plan would be to have a handoff protocol for all parks inside the UGA mm-hmm. and then wait for council to decide how they proceed on annexation? And it doesn't matter what it is, you're prepared because you've looked at every park.
Describing that future state of how that transition works in a formal document that then provides a framework. When we get to that place in time, then we know exactly how this will happen. So that's what I'm suggesting.
Yeah.
And so that work happens regardless of the scenario that we choose.
Yeah.
And then I wanted to share a little bit about transitions. And I mentioned King County. So Magnuson Park is actually a city of Seattle. City of Seattle serves a population of, I don't know what they're at now, 700,000 or something. This was an old military base that had underinvested assets in it and really had an opportunity to be revitalized. And when I talk about operationalizing our regional parks, this is a great example of that. It is jam-packed now, full of athletic venues. There's an indoor tennis facility. It's a private-public partnership at the site. The waterfront has been restored to a natural state with a path that walks around Lake Washington. It's really a unique place. And if you go there on a weekend, it is jam-packed with people from all over the county. And it feels vibrant and alive. So that's an example of a regional scale park where there was an intentional effort to operationalize and revitalize the space. And we have parks in our system that were just like Magnuson Park before it was revitalized. Another one is the Burke Gilman Trail. This is a King County asset. The trail that runs east-west throughout King County, the entirety of the county almost. It acts as a place to go to jog on a beautiful sunny day, but also it's a transportation corridor. People actually use this to get to and from work on their e-bikes, on their bikes.
I've done it.
Scooter,
it's
have
really fun. Yeah.
It's a really neat asset. We have corridors that exist in Clark County that we can do this. We can absolutely do this. So it's transitioning to this regional trail network. You heard David talk about including trails in our next PROS plan. It's absolutely key to making this transition. And then the next that I'll show is Marymore Park. And this is a King County park. Again, it was an underinvested in space, a large regional park that was underinvested in. They made the intentional effort to invest and activate the space through partnerships, private and public partnerships. So there's a fantastic movie series that is just jam-packed. There's a really neat off-leash dog park. There is a concert venue that's set up in the summer months that brings in big names from all over the country that you would all recognize. Cirque du Soleil is there. They have athletic fields there. And they actually built a velodrome that's at Marymore Park. So these are some examples of where King County has kind of reached this threshold, this need to make the transition before Clark County. And now it's our turn. And King County had the exact same budget challenges we do. At one point.
I'm in the Marymore too. So
have you?
I saw some bike riders on that.
It's really an active park.
Cool. Yeah.
And so this is a positive story. This really is a story of a county that is growing, that people want to be in. So the effort to think about what those sustainable pathways to the future look like is absolutely crucial right now. And thinking about funding options to get there. And King County, actually, they're renewing their levy in August, their parks levy. They passed a levy in King County to make this transition a possibility. And so here are a few of those potential funding options. Greater Clark Park District, lid lift, basically increasing the amount we collect within the existing footprint. Changing the nature of the park district, creating a totally new levy countywide, creating a new Metro Park District in addition to the Greater Clark Park District, looking into other taxes and rates and fees that exist. So digging into all of this stuff was our recommendation to County Council, and that is through this body that we're calling our Sustainable Future Task Team. And this task team will evaluate and review potential funding options. It will provide updates to council at work sessions, present a final report to council at the conclusion of the work, and provide a recommendation about which sources, which funding sources make the most sense for the county to consider. So really kind of preliminary look, conceptual look at what type of a future do we want? Which scenario do we choose to go down? And how do we want to, what mechanism do we want to use to get there and providing that recommendation? So we recommended this, creating this to council, and council said, yes, proceed. So we are in the process right now. We drafted a really rough draft of a charter for this group, and absolutely crucial to this conversation, as John brought up, is the Vancouver component to it. And so we took that draft charter and shared it with City of Vancouver staff, and they're reviewing it. We're going to go back and forth and come up with a final version of that draft charter. Our next steps will be to bring that final version to County Council with a rough kind of makeup of what this future task team looks like. What organizations are involved in it, which key stakeholders, obviously Parks Advisory Board is crucial to this conversation. But as important as Parks Advisory Board is, there are many other voices out and throughout the county that we want to be a part of this to look at what the options might be. And so that is an update as to how we're proceeding. So I wanted to share that with you today and solicit any thoughts, initial impacts to you, questions, concerns, hopes, dreams, aspirations, anything that's on your mind.
That's great. I think it's the right direction to go into.
Yeah. I think you've done a good job of demonstrating the need. You know, obviously the biggest task is how do you meet the need. I appreciate there's a lot of work there. can you talk a little bit more about how you envision being involved in that?
Yeah, I think that's probably a subset of PAB dedicated to going to these meetings and being involved in the conversations and actively providing the whole PAB's input into that process. I think that a lot of the community members are going to be relying upon PAB for advice, and I think a lot of community members will look to PAB on that committee.
You got tricked. You didn't bring it up before you committed to.
I wanted to talk a little bit about so that work is ahead in terms of frequency of meetings, when the meetings start. We anticipate this process probably will take 6 months. At the beginning, probably a more frequent, probably a couple times a month, we'll meet for maybe 2 or 3 months. And then the last few months will probably be maybe once a month. That's what I'm thinking right now.
Ross, to clarify though, Clark County staff will be doing the work and the analysis.
Right. So that task team body, we're looking for a group to find a consensus around a recommendation to County Council. What's the right pathway? Do we want to see our parks go into the decline scenario, the sustain scenario, or the fulfill scenario? So that question, part two, how do we fund any one of those future scenarios. What are the potential packages that we could, on a general level, put together? And then upon that recommendation, we would anticipate council to receive that report from committee members, and then council will have a decision as to what next steps they want to take. Typically, in these processes, it's a process of providing additional information from staff, and a key part of this is, if it is a money measure, there's market research that needs to be done, essentially polling community members, creating focus groups to talk about specific dollar amounts, investment amounts, where the dollars are invested, what types of investments are made, how the dollars are allocated, comes at a later date.
Yeah, a lot of this becomes a ballot issue.
I was just thinking when I was looking for his name, Harrison was talking. Yeah, I'm a member of the Vancouver Bicycle Club, and I was wondering, do people like that, or just all the boaters and the rowers and the, you know, what, when would they, you know, like I was thinking of that path, you know, that, yeah, you know, that would be something that those groups would probably have a lot to say about what they would like to see.
Yeah.
And
I started to make the list when he said task team.
And quite honestly, the typically what happens in a potential money measure is that task team type body that the council coordinates. Usually what you'll see is if council decides to proceed with some type of money measure, you'll usually see that body generate a group that's really interested and forms a campaign.
Oh, yeah.
And that's typically what you see. And at that point, if county council decided they wanted to proceed with some money measure, that campaign operates completely independently from the county.
Okay.
But that's completely a voluntary effort, and the county's not involved at all at that point.
Well, what would the timing be of figuring out how to fund this?
So assuming that this process takes 6 to 9 months to bring a recommendation back to council, maybe quicker than that, then council will make a decision and provide direction to staff. That direction could be, we need more data, and we want to know, is the county, are the residents of the county serious about this? And would they support something if we put something on the ballot? Typically, what you'd see that the county council would say, can you please go do the market research at this point? That market research probably takes 3 months, 2 months. It's pretty quick. That then goes back to council in a report, and then council makes a decision about how they want to proceed at that point based on that data. And so the market research, essentially, there are a number of firms out there that you get the phone calls or text messages, surveys, yeah, on the phone.
So answer the calls.
And they ask, if there was a parks levy on the ballot at this dollar amount, would you support it? Are you a strong supporter, medium supporter, or are you completely opposed to this concept?
So that's the three scenarios right there.
Sure. Yeah. And then they get into detail.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you're not a supporter, why not? If you are a strong supporter, why? What are the elements that this levy would need to impact for you that would cause you to vote for it or to not vote for it? So they ask some pretty detailed questions. That shows up in surveys. Typically, market research also brings together focus groups. So stakeholders from throughout the community, using a makeup of those committees and those focus groups, are very diverse demographically, and they're just asking questions, trying to gain insights. That all gets compiled into a report, and then that market research firm presents that to council. And it's statistically valid data that in that market research firm will tell council, yes, a levy at this amount will pass, or they say, no, a levy of that amount will not pass. And that informs us and council as to what they, how they want to proceed.
David, I understand you're collecting names of organizations.
I'm just jotting things down.
So can I offer two that sure. might fit into voices in the community that might have a vested interest? And if they can be brought in, I think they, and one over to the vision, I think it would help the process. Clark County Realtors Association and BIA. Both of them, you know, have a vested interest in livability.
Mm-hmm.
They're also very well funded in their advocacy group efforts.
Yeah, that's a very good
point. Right, and so if they're on board, that's going to be a huge asset. And if they're not, that will be a huge headwind.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Chamber.
You know?
Yeah. And if you have other ideas, think of groups or organizations or individuals after this meeting, please send us an email, let us know who those might be. We want this to be a pretty comprehensive group of different interested parties from throughout the county. And then an important note, you know, we as staff are in a position where we are not advocates. Our job is to provide data to council so they can make decisions. And so it's important, just want to communicate that we have no preference as to whether a money measure or funding scenario presents itself or not. That's not our role. So I just wanted to clarify that. I did want to back up and talk about this forecast really quickly. So you see in 25, we have a current deficit. We are operating without enough operating dollars. So what has happened over the past few years is this has grown. This dollar amount has grown to its current state. So we are in a place where we don't have the funds to operate to maintain what we have. And so we're in a position where we have to make reductions. We have to try to bring this number down and close this gap as much as we possibly can. So there's a few actions we're going to be taking. One is Janice brought this up already, but we have to reduce our watering. It's one of our largest expenses that we can control. And so we're going to be doing that. We have already fertilized our play areas and grass athletic fields, and we're going to keep those watered and healthy through 4th of July, and then come 4th of July, we are going to dramatically reduce our water usage across county parks. We're going to keep our athletic fields green. We're going to water those in a really limited way, but the rest of the park system is going to go brown this summer.
And this is the first time. So I would just offer, particularly for any of you that have not been to the Chalmie. What? How do you say that person's name? Gordon Chalmie.
Gordon Chalmie. Gordon Chalmie.
The old Cedar Creek
National Area. I just call it GJ.
Yeah. Okay. It was a golf course once, and now it's a
Cedar golf course.
And a significant portion of that was donated to the county park system by the former golf course guy. Pardon?
We purchased it.
You purchased it. Yeah, okay. You purchased it. I have recreated there for a number of years, not as a golfer, just as a walker. And it's a lovely place to walk in the woods in the summer, not so much in the winter because the trails aren't surfaced at all with even gravel. So it's slippery. The golf course part is an interesting study in invasive species, and trees dying because they no longer get that summer watering. A bunch of trees are dying. They all won't die, but those that depended on the golf course water did. But so it's a good example of the worst possible scenario for cutting the funds to water the parks. And they have an open house coming up where we ought to be anyway. I'm going to be there.
We're actually going to get an update from Evelyn. She's on the call.
Cool. So it's a great place. It's still a great place to walk, but it's not what it used to be. And it would be a shame to see those little irrigated community parks and neighborhood parks have that happen to them for lack of funding. And then my other comment is, oh, great. And we have all the people that feel like they're being priced out of their homes because of property taxes. And we're going to ask them to add a little more in this interesting state of how it budgets itself. And yet, how do we not?
So I just one quick comment. I watched his presentation, their presentation to the council 2 weeks ago, whatever it was. And they did a good job. What hurt me a little bit was the council was receptive. They're not known historically to be that receptive to somebody coming in to ask for money. So I was pleased with that.
So there's a lot riding on this.
I think that so one of the important notes to Jim, what Jim was saying is council recognized that this is not just a county parks challenge. If and when, to John's question earlier, City of Vancouver annexes north, Vancouver also is in the same position where they will not have the funds to maintain the parks in the urban growth area. So this is a countywide question. And council was clear in that ask that the task team focus countywide, not just on county parks.
And this isn't our problem. This is a problem that every park district has. I mean,
the state, the county, the operation, and maintenance dollars are just not there.
I've been doing this for 30 years. These conversations are had across the country about how to do more with less, and everywhere I've worked. So
we are unique in that the growth is happening at the same time that we have these deficits.
Yeah.
So King County is a great model for how this works.
Yeah.
So the other item I wanted to point out about this year's budget is we have a park that we are maintaining that we actually don't own. And that is Captain William Clark Park in Washougal. It's owned by the Port of Camas Washougal. It was partially developed by the county and the city of Washougal and the city of Camas jointly. And through that investment to develop it, we are contributing significantly to maintaining that park. So we are backing out of that maintenance obligation because it's not ours and we have no business expending dollars we don't have in a park that's not owned by the county.
So Washougal, Camas, Port will take it over.
Correct. So I'm working with them. We have a draft of a kind of a new agreement. We will play a role, but it'll be a very light role.
Mm-hmm.
We will provide a host to help maintain the space. So more to come, more updates on kind of reduction strategies this year. I fully anticipate we will go over budget this year because quite simply we can't maintain what we have, even though we're cutting back as much as we possibly can. So that's the scenario. And thank you for your feedback. Please send thoughts. I wanted to move on to the next topic.
I don't see Lindy, so
let's.
I think Lindy was on here for informational outreach events for 2025, and we just table that in the interest of time anyway, and move on to Danielle and Evelyn. If that's okay.
That's okay with me.
So Evelyn and Danielle, we're going to do the Gordy Jelma update.
Okay. Can everyone hear me all right?
Yes.
Oh, perfect. That almost never happens. I'm going to share my screen and just give you an update on Gordy Jelma, which some of you are already familiar with, so that's great to hear.
Evelyn, can you introduce yourself? We have 1, 2, 3 new Parks Advisory Board members.
Sure. I'm part of the Planning and Development Group. I'm a capital project manager, and I've been with the county for just about 2 years now. And this project is a real exciting opportunity for us. And there's quite a large group of people that have been working on it so far. So Parks Planning and Development Group is supporting Legacy Lands and developing a master plan for this property that they purchased a couple of years ago with Legacy Lands conservation funds. And at the time they were approached by the Kalis Indian tribe. They have a natural resource group that specializes in habitat restoration. And they made a pitch for this site because it has a lot of opportunity and potential. Oh, I'm going in the wrong direction. Hold on. I want to find my, here we go. Here's my introduction slide. It has a lot of potential for restoring stream flow and habitat for spawning salmon. So this is an overview of the site. It's 118 acres. It's located technically in City of Battleground, but near the Brush Prairie Hawkinson area. And the Salmon Creek runs through 2.2 miles of the property. And it is joined with Morgan Creek, which runs through the Salmon Morgan natural area, which is not shown on this map. It's not highlighted, but it's the forested area that I'm using my mouse to go over right now. So all together, the two properties will be, you know, well over 200 acres of conservation area. So as was mentioned before, it was a former golf course, and right now the property has quite a few existing paths that people use for walking. The paths are mostly gravel. They've not been maintained for a while, and the paths cross the creek in numerous areas. In total, we have 11 bridges that we acquired with this property, and we worked to with a consultant to have those evaluated. They're all aging. They're in pretty bad shape, and so almost all, I think all but one, need major repairs or replacement or removal. We also had a consultant go out and evaluate the wetlands on the property. And as you can imagine, being in a river corridor, there's a lot of wetland and a lot of wetland that was previously filled in when they developed this property to become a golf course. But right now we have a total of 26 acres of wetland just existing. So we have, over the past year, we've worked with a consultant team to develop a couple of different options to meet goals of this project. So some of our goals are to improve water quality in Salmon Creek, to remove barriers to salmon spawning. The state went out and they identified, I think, a total of 11 salmon barriers across the property. And we want to improve the access to the site. Right now, there's not the county doesn't own a parking lot structure. So to get to the site, you have to park along the right of way or walk in, which many of the residents do. This map shows the existing cart paths in white. The bridges are numbered. Those are the red dots. And the blue arrows, those are neighborhood access points. So these are just existing paths that people use to get into the site. And then also shown on this existing site features map are some photos of some of the bridges that we have acquired with the purchase of this property. So we have some concepts that have been preliminarily sketched out. I don't have final copies to share, but I did want to say that if you're interested, we have an open house coming up at the end of this month on April 24th, and we're going to be giving a presentation, and we have a survey that's asking for feedback on some of the recreational improvements that we're suggesting. So we'd love to have you there. It's at the Cedars Public House, which is the former golf course clubhouse. It's since been turned into an event space. And we'll be talking about Salmon Creek habitat improvements, trailheads and parking, trail alignment, accessibility, fish passage restoration, and then amenities to support low impact recreation. So things like nature play, water access to, you know, get down and touch the water, interpretive signs, picnic shelters, and a few other low impact amenities. The site, like I said, is the goal of the development is conservation in is the primary goal. So we won't be building any pickleball courts. All right. Well, that's about it. I'd love to answer a few questions if anyone has any.
When's the open house, Evelyn?
It's Thursday, April 24th, and it's from 6 to 8 p.m.
Thank you.
Our typical time, 6 to 8. Presentation starts at 6:30. And it's hybrid. So if you want to attend, you can dial in. I believe, Evelyn, the survey is currently running.
No, we won't open the survey until April 24th, but then it will be open online for a little more than a month.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And we have a website. You can Google Gordy Jolma Family Natural Area, and it should pop up. It has the information on how to join remotely for this open house event. And afterwards, we post the presentation online, and that's where you can find the link to the survey as well.
Thank you, Evelyn.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're so welcome.
Thanks, Evelyn.
Thank you.
Yes. Get everybody. Jenny, do you have anything?
No, I'm just here to observe.
Okay, all right. Anybody have something?
No, thank you. It's very interesting. Oh, sorry.
Well, I have one thing. It's actually a piece of news. So Clark County, as you may know, is a home rule charter county. We're on the 7 in the state. We're the most recent. 2025 is scheduled to be when a charter review commission is elected to see if there are amendments needed to the charter. I want you to hear from me first. I'm going to be running for one of those positions. Just since we come together and interact, I tell you personally.
Okay.
It's nonpartisan, but you may hear about it in the future.
Good. I would like to let you all know that we are planning a groundbreaking for Curtin Creek Community Park. No date has been tied down yet, but it is in the coming weeks. It is imminent, but no date has been confirmed exactly.
We will let you all know. Amy will get an email onto everybody and inform you of that.
I believe the contract has been signed with Tapney.
Okay.
So
I have to talk to Lindy about one thing.
Yeah, for sure.
I will be out of country next month. So
here you go.
I'm going to England for a week in London, then a week of garden tours, historic garden tours, and then to the Chelsea Flower Show. So
very fun.
Oh, cool. The weather, I have the weather map. It's sunny. It's raining. It's just like here.
Yeah.
So it's still over a month away. So
are you worried about being able to return to the United States?
I told my husband, we got our passports early. We've got our global entry early.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. Are you taking your birth certificate to prove that you're an American?
I know. I don't know. I should do that.
You should do that.
And then, you know, I didn't change my name when I got married. So I should bring my marriage license to me. If that made me
bring it all.
Social security card.
Jam, Dad.
Yeah, they burnt their phone.
Nothing for the good of the order.
Right.
There's nothing on my phone. Standing grams. Thank you so much.
Okay. Thanks, everybody. See you, team.
See y'all next month.
Yes.
Hopefully, ladies. Thanks. Have an enjoyable trip.